Thanks for listening to Chicago's Morning Answer podcast, sponsored by Signature Bank. Signature Bank takes pride in helping customers grow their business and provide unmatched banking expertise, custom financial solutions, and the industry's best technology. So whether you're a business looking for a deposit relationship or needs a ready source of financing, Signature Bank is the right bank for you. Call today at 773-467-5600 to hear how Signature Bank can help your business grow and thrive. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
Now, from the Signature Bank Studios, this is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. I know, you know, everybody's talking about the fall. Joe Biden getting sandbagged at the Naval Academy's graduation yesterday. But it is drawing attention away from the real story. We got another tale of fabulism from Joe Biden yesterday. That's the real story. Another entry into fabulous Joe Biden's annals of accomplishments that he actually didn't accomplish. You know, he was going to go to the Naval Academy. You didn't know that? You never heard that story? Neither has anybody else until yesterday.
When I was graduating from high school 300 years ago, I applied to the Naval Academy. And I was picked by the senator. There's two ways senators can pick. They can pick individually, or they can name 10 people and let the academy choose. I was a relatively good football player, so I had a shot. I remember the day when a guy named Steve Dunning from my class was also nominated. Drove up, was about 7 in the morning, we were going to drive down to Annapolis. And I had just heard the night before, they had a halfback named Joe Bellino, won the Heisman Trophy, and a quarterback named Roger Staubach. I went to Delaware.
Right, because he was, did he play quarterback at Delaware? No. So he was going to go to the Naval Academy because obviously he had the chops for the Naval Academy. But then Roger Staubach was there. And so he said, well, I can't play football because I was a pretty good football player at the Naval Academy. So I'm going to go to Delaware where I didn't play football. Okay. The other matter on this story is Steve Dunning, you know, he drove down to the Naval Academy with. He went to University of Oklahoma. The other part of the story about how he got nominated by a senator, then Delaware Senator Kayla Boggs, he's previously said, he said last year, I was appointed to the Academy in 1965 by a senator who I was running against in 1972. Never planned it that way. But he graduated from Delaware in 1965. This just in, the Naval Academy doesn't have graduate programs. So how could he have been appointed to the Naval Academy in 1965 by Senator Kayla Boggs when he graduated from the University of Delaware in 1965?
312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line. You could also always reach us on our text line, 64636, type in DA, then a quick comment.
I believe this was, this occurred after he stared down Corn Pop at the community pool and said, you're not going to intimidate me. And it was before he attended an HBCU, before he got a start at Delaware State Historically Black College University. Was this was before before he got arrested trying to see Nelson Mandela in South Africa? Now, and I think that was also before he spent 17, he traveled with the Chinese President Xi for 17,000 miles through the Himalayas. The story about Joe Biden is that he's feeble, is he, the question of his mental acuity. The story of Joe Biden is that he is a profligate liar, and he has been since his formative years. That's the story. I don't know why we as conservatives, I said this during the campaign too, get hung up. He doesn't have the capacity for the job and this and that. Oh, and he fall down and go boom. I've fallen and I can't get up. Let's start with the Med Alert jokes. It completely missing the point. Point is, he's a bad person.
He's a liar. He's a pathological liar. Remember when he was vice president, he said, oh, I tried to get my uncle, the Purple Heart. His uncle had died 20 years before. I mean, it's just a string of lies about this guy.
He makes Brian Williams look restrained by comparison. But we did have another classic Joe Biden. This is back when he was operating under the nom de plume Commander McBragg. And he tells a story of summiting the Himalayas and taking out the abominable snowman. I think you'll like this. If you like the story about him being appointed to the Naval Academy, you'll certainly like this.
Well, the Himalaya Mountains, my most exciting climb.
Commander, I must be good.
I was making the climb alone, except for bearers to carry supplies and weapons. We soon encountered a howling blizzard. My trusty bearers were unable to keep up with me. My tremendous stride, don't you know? And then it happened, an avalanche of snow. Deftly, I jumped aside, but the snow completely covered my bearers. There I was, alone in the blizzard. At that moment, I found myself facing a tribe of horrible monsters, the abominable snowmen. I raced up the mountain with the screaming monsters hot on my heels. I reached the top ahead of them, but there I could go no further. Trapped by the abominable snowmen.
But what did you do?
I did the only possible thing. I whipped out my trusty lighter, sparked it into flame, and melted the abominable snowman. Then I simply used one of the monster's shields as a snow sled. Then sped to the bottom of the mountain, a conquering hero.
Absolutely unbelievable.
Quite.
There was the assist there. That was a young Anderson Cooper interviewing Commander McBragg, a.k.a. Joe Biden, a.k.a. Mr. 10%, a.k.a. the big guy back in the day. I mean, a harrowing tale. They just never stop with Joe Biden. George in Naperville, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Yeah, Dan, Biden's on par with those Korean leaders. The first time they golf, they get all hole-in-ones.
Kim Jong-il, played golf. The first time he played golf, 11 holes-in-one in 18 holes, which is an impressive start. It really is sort of a natural. It's too bad he didn't live longer. Maybe he could be on the senior tour.
And see, what I took away from Biden's commencement speech yesterday was how different it was from Howard University's. Remember, it was just a month ago when he said white supremacy is the single most dangerous terrorist threat to our homeland.
Most dangerous terrorist threat to our homeland is white supremacy. And I'm not saying this because I'm under the black HBCU. I say it wherever I go.
Yeah, he says it wherever he goes. Well, he didn't mention that yesterday during the commencement speech at Air Force. He thanked the troops for their service. For putting service over self. He was at the Air Force Academy in Colorado Springs, and he, did get in.
Oh, yeah, he was talking about the talking Naval about Academy, the, right.
Yeah, but he did get in, climate change. Don't forget.
Growing instability, the food insecurity, the natural disasters, all of which are being made worse by the existential threat of climate change.
Mm-hmm. Right on point.
Well, I mean,
that's what we have to fear, climate change.
I don't have anything to fear as long as he's in the White House. This is the same guy who stood on the Eastern Seaboard and said, Ebola, you shall not pass. You shall not make landfall in America, the Ebola virus. And the Ebola virus really didn't. And Joe Biden gets credit for that as well. So I don't really have much to fear as long as he is there. If you thought Obama could part the seas, could recede the waters, as it were, I mean, I think the Joe Biden record is pretty clear here that the world has nothing to fear so long as he occupies the Oval Office.
It's like a hot, steaming cup of information to start your day. It's Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
From the Signature Bank Studios. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson.
When I'm sending audio.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. James Crown and the Civic Committee of the Commercial Club of Chicago have a goal to make Chicago the safest big city in America.
Yay. Somebody finally is going to save us. So what's the plan, man?
They've got a five-point plan. You ready for it?
All right, wait, hold on. Let me get my pen and paper because I want to do my share. I want to step up. Okay, what's the five-point plan?
And the goal here is to reduce annual homicides in the city to under 400 within 5 years. Right, so basically to cut killings in Chicago by half in five years.
Okay. Wait, I mean, we're good. We had five shot last night. A 14-year-old was fatally killed with a shootout with police. Okay.
Not exactly Daniel Burnham stuff here. Not exactly make no small plan stuff here, would you say? James Crown, billionaire dilettante Democrat, is going to act it, and his buddies on the Civic Committee are going to act as a shadow government to do on the west and south sides what the city is also doing. Going to amplify it. Impressed? 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro-answer line, 64636-DA, turnkey.pro-text line. Number one.
I'm ready.
Scaling community violence intervention programs.
Which, I mean, they say that. There's so many programs out there, and I don't even know what all of them do.
Doesn't matter. Just
Throw money at people.
Just get them all on a platform together. Get representatives of all the programs on a platform together. Talk about how you're partnering with these community programs. Don't even bother to figure out who is actually moving the needle and who is not. Who cares?
Have peace circles. Those peace circles they had at Memorial Day weekend here were just pathetic. People gathered on their lawns and talked about the problems in their neighborhood. But that didn't solve anything.
If you're participating in a peace circle, you're probably not part of the problem. Did you ever think of that? Number two, provide jobs for the participants in the community violence intervention programs. That sounds familiar. Don't we have a mayor who's focused on combing through the budget to find cash for make work annualized jobs? Number three, enhancing policing and criminal justice reforms. Oh, yeah. Balancing act. I got it. Number four, hire more broadly from the south and west sides of Chicago. For what? What are you going to hire residents in the south and west side of Chicago to do? Is it indiscriminate hiring?
And what are you going to have them?
Is it skills-based hiring? Who are you going to hire where to do what? And number five, investing directly in the south and west sides of Chicago. Oh, okay. Where? You're going to invest how much, where, to do what? Robert Boyk, the vice president of the public safety, vice president of public safety for the Civic Committee. Oh, that's a serious person. If we really want the city to be safer, we have to be part of the solution. Well, that's novel. And that involves us opening our doors in perhaps some non-traditional ways to include individuals who need stable jobs to break the cycle of generational poverty. Finally.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah.
Thank you, Robert Boyk, Vice President of Public Safety for the Civic Committee. These are your village elders in the city. James Crown, thanks to Dad, is a billionaire. You should look at James Crown's political donation history. It's really funny. Dilettante, as I said. And since James Crown, the headliner here, he's going to fill some kind of void allegedly left by Ken Griffin. That's what it feels like he's doing. I want my name in the papers. I want to be the top billionaire. Aren't you cute?
All family money. Excuse me.
No, no, he's an entrepreneur, just like J.B. Pritzker.
Right.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Come on, what do you think? Big news. We have the business community stepping up, we're supposed to believe. Scaling community violence intervention programs. And they're so sophisticated. They've done their homework here because they have CVI in parentheses. You know, they know all the acronyms. James Crown is street level here.
What's CVI? I'm sorry.
CVI, Community Violence Intervention Programs. Oh, yeah. You know, the CVI programs. You know, we're talking.
I thought
talking,
I was street. I'm not.
Talking the same in the same parlance here. James Crown gave $75 million to University of Chicago. It was a couple years ago, you may remember. And that was protested by the students at University of Chicago. U of C, since we're doing acronyms. Yeah, CVIs, U of C. The protest was because, a lot of the Crown money is a result of their interest in General Dynamics, which is a defense contractor. And so James Crown is big Democrat. And you see that Brad Schneider, Tammy Duckworth, Beto O'Rourke, Joe Biden, Hillary Clinton. And then you see like a Mike Gallagher, the Republican Army vet from Wisconsin, who's on who's the chair of that Chi-Com committee, investigation into the Chinese Communist Party. Why? Well, he's a defense contractor. So, you know, we got to sprinkle the infield. Okay, we'll give Mike Gallagher some money. He's an operator, James Crown. So sophisticated. You know, I know he's sophisticated, and I know he's smart, and I know he has all the answers to what ails the city because he's a billionaire. And as we know, wealth is a function of intelligence, and wealth is a function of capacity. If you are a billionaire, then you are an expert and you have value to add in with everything you do.
Well, it's just like Bill Gates. I mean, it was Dr. Gates during COVID because they have money. They think that they're uber intelligent and that they can dabble in every field.
Bill Gates is one of the leading epidemiologists and infectious disease experts in the world. There's no question.
Remember? He gave us advice. He told me to wash my hands. And to do other things.
There's nothing that a billionaire can't do.
They love the attention. They love the media profiling. It's, you know, so Mr. Crown wanted in.
Absolutely.
That's why he came up with this 5-point plan to cut homicides in half within 5 years.
I can predict a James Crown Community Center popping up on the
Maybe
west side somewhere.
James Crown Parade. I mean, if we get her done.
Sure. Yeah. You know what James Crown didn't do?
What?
He was probably too busy working on this plan, robust as it is. I didn't hear him say anything, provide any support for the Invest in Kids K-12 scholarship program in Illinois. Did I miss that? You know, the one that benefited mainly lower income, mainly minority families in places like the South and West Sides of Chicago. That program. Does he believe in education? I think he does, given his education and his pedigree. So where was James Crown and the Civic Committee and Robert Boyk and the rest of them during that fight, during the last 5 years? Where were they inveighing against those Democrats they fund who killed the scholarship program? Is that a pathway out of the hood and terrible schools?
Education's the only way out. And you tweeted out students from Northridge Prep that were, you know, that are benefits of the scholarship program. And I couldn't even watch it. It makes me sad that they're not going to have that anymore. Didn't Mr. Crown or any of the lawmakers see that before they voted against it?
Oh, they saw it.
They just...
And here you heard Mike Scott's newscast this morning where Pritzker was saying, oh, you know, I believe in tax credits to do stuff, and maybe we can do something with the tax credit scholarships. But if the feds pick up the bill, but, you know, that's something to work out over the summer as we head into the fall. You know what that is?
And kicking the can down the road.
No, well, it's that, but it's keeping the families at bay and keeping the gatekeepers of the families at bay. It's the way to get these morons like Juan Ranjel and Tony Holter, who heads up Empower Illinois, to continue with the same strategy they employed this past legislative session, which is, please, we won't say anything. And by the way, Republicans were on this too. The former Senate super minority leader, Dan McConkie. This was, don't say anything. Shh. Don't say anything about the scholarship program because the Democrats told us not to. Right. We're going to get beaten up in a back alley. Now, we can bring parents to Springfield and parade them around like talismen, but don't start criticizing Democrats. Don't put them on the spot. Don't make their life uncomfortable. Because as we know, the way to advance the flag in politics is to not apply pressure. So we'll just run through the steps, dutifully doing what the Democrats tell us to do, and then they'll quietly include the scholarship program into the budget that the teachers' unions financiers of the left don't want. Interesting. And so what is Pritzker doing? Stringing them along. Hey, 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 it's not over. So don't get all ornery. Don't think about activating families. Don't think about having some properly, legitimately, righteously, morally indignant black mom say, hey, those rich honkies at the teachers union say they can send their kids to better schools, and Chris Welch can send his kids to Timothy Christian, and a Jelly Belly can send his kids to Latin, but I don't get the opportunity for my kid for a better school to attend. Well, go make love to yourself. You don't want that in the public arena. That's ugly. No, no, no. Hey, 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 let's be civil. Let's civilly kill a tax credit scholarship program for poor kids in Illinois. Let's lead the nation, first in the nation ever to kill a scholarship, K-12 scholarship program after initiation. And I'm sorry, where were the billionaires? Where was James Crown?
Because this is something that he could have done that was right in front of his face. That he could have done to help the community because education is the only way out in some of these poor neighborhoods. And he was quiet.
Yeah, there was a good editorial in the Wall Street Journal yesterday, The School Choice Century. Oh. It's a story of people who fought, just like the Civil Rights Movement, just like those who brought Brown v. Board of Education to the Supreme Court. And now James Crown, who was part of Stand for Children, by the way, an organization that pretended to be for K-12 competition, but would never cross the teachers union, run by Democrats, you know, his buddies, Democrat underlings, former Madigan staffers and the like, Lisa Madigan. It was also supported by Bruce Rauner, who didn't know up from down. If he didn't have some guidance, we would have never got the tax credit scholarship program done in the first place. So pulled in every direction was he. And all of these big shots, the big timers in the city, the C-suiteers, the wealthy, they know. They all know. And they're cowards. And they just like they know the origins of these noxious organizations that lord over the state. They know that Planned Parenthood was founded by a eugenicist. They know the teachers' unions have a long history of racism. Reminded of this in this Wall Street Journal editorial I mentioned. In a wave of anti-immigrant hysteria following World War I, the NEA championed the passage of language laws that restricted or even prohibited the teaching of foreign languages. In fact, there was a seminal case that went to the Supreme Court, Meyer v. Nebraska, where the Supreme Court set aside a teacher's conviction for the quote-unquote crime of teaching German through reading of Bible verses at a Lutheran school. This was the beginning of the school choice century, culminating in part in 2002 with the decision in Zelman versus Hardin-Simmons upholding the Cleveland school choice program. And school choice is exploding, particularly in places with sensible governance like Indiana and Florida, but even in some places where there are, Dems in charge or had been in charge. They didn't, at least they didn't move to kill it, because a constituency had been built around the program in just about every state where it exists, today. And those families got activated. Not here. Even some of the proponents are on the take, effectively. They lay down. I mean, it's sort of the corollary to was it Royko? The formulation, it was either Royko or Cass, I can't remember which, but when Larry Bloom, the Hyde Park alderman, got a pinch for bribery in Chicago, even the reformers go to jail. You know, Larry Bloom was this goo-goo from Hyde Park, gets pinched for bribery. Even the reformers go to jail in Illinois. Even the school choice advocates in Illinois genuflect before the teachers' unions and their surrogates in elective office. But no. James Crown is coming to save the day. Right. Ron, Southside, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Hey, good morning, Dan and Amy. Don't forget the community activists to kill the D.C. scholarship choice program in Washington, D.C. Don't forget about that creep. But lastly, you're not going to get rid of crime, solve some of these issues with these quote-unquote intervention programs, hiring former gang bangers. Okay? It's like the fire department hiring some former arsonists to put the fire out. So you all have a good day and a great weekend.
Thanks for the call, Ron.
A lot of the peacekeepers. Or are they going to be out again this weekend? From last week, and they're former felons, gang bangers.
We talk people. About this like this is a problem limited to the weekends, as you were just mentioning.
Oh, my God. The shootout with police last night on the South Side, a 14-year-old is dead.
The women that have been robbed this week in Lincoln Park.
Oh, yeah.
Rash of robberies there. Marty, Naperville.
Hey, good morning. You guys earlier were talking about Bill Gates being this, you know, as a meteorologist or whatever. The problem is people listen to these people. They think money means knowledge or something. I don't know, but this is why people, there's somebody paying $94,000 to see Taylor Swift this weekend. And that's obviously somebody.
Hey,
it's $92,146,
and
that's for Sunday's show, one ticket.
I like Taylor Swift, so I'm going.
Is that why you're here back in town? You're a Swiftie.
I would have gone up to 95,000, but I got it at 92.1.
You can come and see the Rob Post Band for $9.45, okay?
Right.
How's that sound? And Russ Chodger, your old friend, is our drummer.
Grew up on my block.
Oh, that's yeah. It's a better show, Dan.
Thanks for the call, Marty. Boy, a lot of talent on that block, Wilson Avenue in Wheaton.
Yeah.
Henry in St. Charles.
Yeah, hi. You were talking about law and order. You know, the root of the problem is cops can do what they got to do. But who's going to prosecute? Jim Fox? Come on. What's the judge going to do if Jim Fox does nothing?
Thanks for the call, Henry. By the way, this is the month we should get a ruling from the Illinois State Supreme Court on the constitutionality of the Safety Act.
Oh, my. And if that...
yeah.
Ooh.
I didn't see any talk of... I mean, I guess this is all under the heading of policing and criminal justice reforms. But, you know, you would think that this wise class of successful executives or scions of rich families would break this out in a little bit more detail to talk about to all the stakeholders in the criminal justice system. But, you know, I'm sure they'll get to that. I'm sure there'll be a deck and there'll be some color graphs and
pie charts.
Yeah.
Like no, charts. The Kamala Harris pie charts that we love so much.
She's a Venn diagram girl.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah. But they'll probably have both.
Yeah. Mess that up.
Look for some more pronouncements. It's not that Marty said that people think if you have money that you have knowledge. I mean, they do have some knowledge, and they do take an interest in civic things. They don't have an understanding. What's lacking is not even knowledge. It's wisdom. There's no judgment here.
Right, but they're so powerful that they have access to the mainstream media. So if they want to make a declarative statement, they could just call MSNBC. Oh, yes, Mr. Gates, we'll be over right away.
There's nothing mainstream about the D.C. press corps or its Chicago outpost, but yes, your point is taken.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
It's me. Hi, I'm the problem. It's me. At tea time.
I'll have my big lighter flickering during this song on Sunday.
I think you're back in Taylor Chicago because of the Taylor Swift concert. You're a Swiftie, just admit it, you know?
I'm not, but I actually do like this song. It's a little put upon, you know, she's sort of internalizing all the criticism she gets and so on and so forth. But I do like that song, Anti-Hero.
I got a gig for you tonight. For $18 an hour, you can usher. At the concert. But you have to be there at 3, and then you're going to leave after 11:30 at night.
$18 an hour, and I get to see Taylor Swift?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, boy. Backstage pass?
You'd be the oldest usher.
Yeah.
You might look a little creepy.
Yeah. Plus, I'm afraid of prepubescent girls.
Oh, really?
So I would be overrun.
Well, there's going to be a lot of tears. I mean, people have been lined up. They lined up at 1 a.m. Friday morning just to purchase merchandise. Outside Soldier Field. They started lining up this morning for her concert tonight. It's going to be Friday, Saturday, Sunday. So traffic's going to be a mess around Soldier's Field. Uh-huh. But my son is comparing her. He thinks that she's as big, if not bigger, than Michael Jackson.
Well,
that this is a historical concert, a once-in-a-lifetime concert and at Soldier Field, and it's going to be great.
Well, but I mean,
for their standards,
I don't
right?
know. I mean, but maybe by the numbers, she's close. I don't know. I mean, but, you know, like...
We all have stars of our times. I mean, for me, it was obviously Elvis. I'm dating myself. No, Elvis, and then for me, it was Prince, Michael Jackson, and I'm just still waiting for the next big one.
For you, it was Charlie Chaplin.
Stop it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
The talkies. Yeah.
Yeah. I love silent film.
Well, yeah, part of this is like quality, you know, things can be popular and also tawdry and meritless.
She's a good dancer. She's a great songwriter. She's grown on me. I never thought she was good looking, but now she's developed into a fine young lady.
Okay.
And well, she's a big country star. Now she's a pop star.
Okay. Grandma.
She's reinvented herself very well.
Don't go to the Taylor Swift concert.
I might break a hip.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you might get sandbagged like Mr. 10%. We don't want that to happen to you. All right, that's enough Taylor Swift talk, I think. It's more than I had planned for this show or any show ever.
Well, it's the reason why you're back in Chicago, so just admit it.
Yeah, right. All right. Last night, Trump had his Fox News town hall hosted by Hannity in Iowa among the Trump faithful. How do I know that it was Trump faithful in that audience? Because this was what the crowd chanted during a commercial break.
Really?
Takes a lot of the guesswork out of who was in the crowd. So there was just, I mean, I think the entire town hall and maybe Trump's entire candidacy can be boiled down to this moment. If you want to understand his staying power, and I know the argument, oh, he's a former president and a former president with all that he accomplished, and yet he's still only at 45 to 55% against this field. and that shows real weakness. Different times, but clearly there are weaknesses, whether Trump wants to admit them or not. But if you want to understand his staying power, despite the weaknesses, particularly those who maybe like Trump but say it's time to turn the page to DeSantis or Scott or somebody, if you want to understand it, listen to this exchange between Trump and Hannity, where Hannity asks him the quotidian question, can't you just calm down a little bit? Can't you just tone it down a little bit? Don't punch down, so on and so forth.
I think everyone here tonight is likely voting for you, right? So, however, it's going to come down to those people that maybe you're in the middle a little more. And the argument that they make to me is, if he would just tone it down a hair, stop a little of the name calling. Hang on. I said it's their question. Leave me alone. All right. That it might help you with swing voters in that are needed for you to get over the finish line. It's already hard enough electoral vote-wise for a Republican to win. What do you say to them?
Okay, you ready? And I say this to everybody. I won an election. It was unprecedented. We beat somebody that supposedly had it made. And, you know, they probably did things in that election, too. They were shocked. But I came into office. And from the day I got in, I was under siege by people that have been in Washington for many years, put in there by many different presidents. In most cases, people that were against me, like they spied on my campaign. They did all sorts of things. I was under investigation and under siege, and so were my people. And if I wasn't tough, I wouldn't be here right now, I guarantee you that. If I didn't fight back, I wouldn't be here. What they did is so bad, and they've been caught. Now, so far, nothing's happened to them of consequence. We had an Attorney General, Bill Barr, who didn't have the courage to fight. He just didn't have the courage. He was a nice man, but he didn't have the courage. He lost his courage when they wanted to impeach him. They said, we're going to impeach Bill Barr. They didn't even know why. There was no reason to impeach him. He didn't do anything wrong. But he didn't have the courage. We need courage in this country, or we're going to lose our country.
312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line, 646-36-DA, turnkey.pro text line. This is what, first of all, I disagree with him about Bill Barr, but that's not really material. I tweeted this over the weekend. Loyalty to Trump comes from a belief, his ego and excesses notwithstanding, he entered politics solely to elevate America's forgotten families at the expense of the D.C. Uniparty. That's what the people in that audience believe. And so the first challenge for his challengers, in my view, is to persuade GOP primary voters this is also their why. This is also why they have entered the race. Because if you don't start from that premise, if you can't persuade a majority of the Republican primary electorate that you're starting from that basis, then you're not going to dislodge Trump. I just don't believe you will. It's interesting what he said there. They came after me and my people. That's how they view Trump. That's how Trump supporters view Trump, is that every time you attack Trump, you're attacking me. I don't know why this is mystifying to people. So if you don't want to believe it, you don't have to. But it's just true. This is what people are. This is the market feedback. So you may want to take notice of it if you're a challenger or in the challenger's camp. Well, that's what they believe. They believe they everybody. I mean, how long have you talked about this? Trump's not just an insurrectionist. So is everybody who voted for him. So is everybody in D.C. on that day.
Don't forget. I mean,
Trump's not just deplorable. So is every single person who voted for him.
People who voted for Trump, they were told, well, you did this. You are a part of this with the January 6th insurrection.
Yes. The Trump voters after 2016. Forget January 6th. After 2016, you know, people have memories of experiences. How many Trump voters were told by someone in their family or friend circle, colleague circle, that they should be shunned. They are no longer part of civil society. How many people who voted for Trump in 2016 were treated by someone they know as the way the unvaxxed were treated at the height of COVID?
I was. People in the school where I worked were panning because I went to Mar-a-Lago and kids were whispering like, she's a Trump fan. There's a picture of her and Trump. But not only that, my friend from the Netherlands who still lives in Europe, she called me and she was crying. She's like, you did this. Don't you understand? And I said, I was not in D.C. I didn't do anything. And if I was there, I would not have done that. I know what boundaries are.
Stop getting hung up on January 6th. It's not about January 6th. It's bigger than that. If you want to understand the political dynamic here. This is the way I attacking Trump to these Trump loyalists is like attacking them personally. You're saying they're a bad person. That's how it's being received. And then they look at the field and they say, well, Ron DeSantis, the main challenger, certainly at this point, you know, Trump, he conceded again in New Hampshire. A lot of great policy accomplishments. I agree with a lot of what he did, and I said so. But then all the other stuff. And what a Trump voter says in response to that, I think you're seeing is say, well, wait a second. If we're going to get the same policy agenda with either of you, and the only difference is you don't, you know, you, like so many, don't like the egotistical forays and the pettiness and some of these other behaviors. Well, that petty egotist went to bat for me. And so I'm not going to walk away from him if I'm going to get the same fight for me. And I know I'm going to get it from him, and I may believe I'm going to get it from DeSantis, but I haven't seen it because I don't live in Florida. And even if I believe it, why should I not stick with the guy who went to the mat for me and continues to endure all of these unfair assaults, including, you know, under the guise of law? Why should I take a walk?
These civil suits, these frivolous criminal charges. I mean, that's when I and I don't know. And if I would love to hear from somebody why is DeSantis? I was all DeSantis. Now I'm not. I mean, I'm just kind of lukewarm on him. I don't like the way he's handling it. I don't know what it is. I can't pinpoint it. If you could help me, I'd appreciate it.
Well, here was DeSantis in New Hampshire.
The reporter.
Yesterday. No. Oh. Speaking to actual people of interest, okay. Like Republican primary voters.
Florida held the line when freedom itself hung in the balance. We were not going to let our state descend into some type of Faucian dystopia where people's livelihoods were destroyed and their freedoms were curtailed. No, we stood up to protect people's rights, to protect people's jobs, to protect their businesses, and to protect our kids' right to get an in-person education. And you know what? We were better off as a result of that. We chose freedom over Fauciism, and that was the right thing to do.
Freedom over Fauciism, I don't disagree with the word that DeSantis said. And he's gotten credit on this show. He will continue to get credit. I've said my view. Best governor in America, smart guy, principled guy, advances a conservative reform flag.
Yeah, much better than Cuomo. I mean, he was the opposite of Cuomo, and he did it right. And I respect that. We lost thousands of Illinoisans to Florida, the smart people who can get away and do, you know, improve their kids' lives.
But the problem with that, and that's just a snippet from his remarks, but the problem I see right now from the DeSantis campaign is that they have the answers to questions out of order. That's DeSantis telling you what he did. It's not telling you why he does what he does. That's the predicate question. An alternative viewpoint on this, in terms of what DeSantis should do, comes from our friend Alex Berenson, who writes over his Substack. And he is a DeSantis supporter, not a Trump fan, particularly in this matchup. He writes, Alex Berenson, the only way to deal with Trump is neither to ignore him or engage him. It is to dismiss him in the simplest, crudest way possible, in a way that cuts to the self-doubt at his core. Don't threaten him with prosecution or blow up his importance by calling him a danger to American democracy. Just make it clear you aren't afraid of him and move on. An example Berenson gives to give you a sense of what he's saying. That guy's a moron. Even Tony Fauci fooled him. What an idiot. I couldn't care less what he says about me. I've got a vision for this country that's about something more than me and my whining. I've got a record that's something more than complaining about 2020 forever. I'm a winner, not a loser. That's what DeSantis should say. And Berenson's argument is Trump's core supporters are going to hate DeSantis for saying that, but they're never going to vote for DeSantis anyway. And that's the path to a majority in the primary, or the pluralities, and ultimately a majority. 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line, 64636-DA, turnkey.pro text line. Eric, Rolling Meadows.
Hey, good morning, guys. Happy Friday. You can never forget that Trump never got rid of Fauci. DeSantis is the only one that's ever said anything. He never said anything wrong, never got rid of him, kept him in place. We all got lied to. We all got fleeced. Plain and simple.
Thanks for the call, Eric. I think that
he
is...
didn't fire Comey quick enough, I don't think. I mean, it was 90 days, but still.
That's the one of the strong... The Fauci thing is one of the stronger indictments of Trump, one of the more glaring errors in judgment he made, but is it enough?
Well, didn't he bring on Scott Atlas to kind of counterbalance Fauci? But it was too late. I mean, it was after, you know, the kids were already supposed to be back in school.
Clay, Libertyville.
Morning, Dan, Navy. You know, I'm loyal to the Constitution. I'm loyal to truth. I'm loyal to law. I'm loyal to man with fault. I've got some liberal friends who say, oh, you just worship the ground Trump walks on. You worship the man more than God. That couldn't be the farthest thing from the truth. I'm always the first one to call out Trump for something that I don't like. And he had a couple of those moments throughout his entire presidency. I love Trump, but guess what? He's a man that gave up everything, that came to fight for me. Just a small, you know, young kid living in Illinois in America. He stood up for me. That's what I see. That's why I like Trump. That's why I'm going to continue to vote for Trump. DeSantis, you know what? It's a weird gut feeling. And Amy, I'm going to agree with you for once on this show. I don't know what it is, but it's just not right. I like him as governor, love him as governor, keep him there. Florida's such a big swing state. You know, what is it, 2020 electoral?
It's not a swing state anymore, but yeah,
no,
go ahead.
Right.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, well, yeah, because that's because of DeSantis. Stay there, buddy. You're doing awesome. You're killing it there. We've got an awesome president. We've already seen him do 4 years. Back off. Let him kill another 4 years. Then we'll see where you're at. You know,
what's his political future? Because they have term limits, right, in Florida. So when he's done with this term, he's done.
Now's the time for DeSantis, I think. I think it does make sense for him to go. But I just hope people heard that first part of what Clay said. Not just because it confirms my thesis, because I didn't prompt Clay to say it. He fought. He did this for me. That when if somebody believes that you took up their fight when nobody else would, they are going to remember that.
Yep.
That has stickiness. And I just don't. I think you listen to these pundits. And they don't have, with maybe the exception of Selena Zito, they don't have an appreciation for that psychic connection.
And life was easier when Trump was in office. People were making money. They weren't living paycheck to paycheck. And now, you know, we live in fear, and it's not, and the mortgage rates are insane. I mean, when he was in office, it was, what, 2.5% for a 30-year fix? Things were good.
Corey in Woodlawn.
Hey, good morning, Dan and Amy. I'm almost dealing with what the last caller said. You saw the visceral hate for Trump. As you rolled down the Hudson Boulevard, they were taking his name off the buildings. They were even trying to do that in Chicago.
Oh, yeah.
These liberals were going crazy. But he stood firm when he fought these liberals. And that was my against all conservatives back in the day, they would not go to bat with these liberals. And these liberals, they literally come to fight with knives, guns, and swords. I mean, Romney, they say he left a thing on the trunk of his car, and they were going after him for stupid stuff. They did the same for the young lady up there in Alaska. They went after Sarah Palin. These guys are relentless, and you've got to have a fighter in that ring. Thanks, guys.
Thanks for the call, Corey. Tony, Downers Grove.
Hey, Dan. I mean, I disagree with you that Trump can't be dislodged, but it's
I didn't say that. That's not what I said.
Did not say that.
I said if you do not, what did I say? If you do not address the why question and you do not persuade Republican primary voters that that you are similarly situated with Trump, you know, that you are doing this solely to take up their fight against the political ruling class in D.C. If you are not persuasive on that score, then you will not dislodge Trump.
Okay. So let me rephrase. So you're saying that the challenger has to have the people in the same mindset thinking about them as they do about Trump. And isn't that what every good candidate does? Don't they convince people that they're picking up the fight for them and they're going to bring the fight to the other side? But
well, everybody says that, but not everybody persuades the electorate that they're going to do it. And my point now, and using that clip from DeSantis in New Hampshire, is that he is describing what he did. He's describing his record, and that's certainly part of the conversation. But he is failing to answer the why question before he tells everybody the what and the how.
Well, and I don't disagree what I'm saying, but I think the only way that Trump is going to get dislodged is if the people who are conservative and have that bad taste, yeah, he fought for me, but he's not going to win the general election. And we have to wake up and realize that.
Well, thanks for the call, Tony. But the problem with that argument is, at least right now, the polling says otherwise. It doesn't say he's a mortal lock to win. No, but he is, in most of the recent polling, he is doing as well, if not better, than DeSantis in a head-to-head matchup with Biden.
In a number of states, even in California, he's 25 points ahead. 34, excuse me, 34.
Well, that's against DeSantis. What I'm saying is that he can't win a general is the argument. And you look at Rust Belt states, you look at nationally, right now, the polling has him doing as well or better than DeSantis. So as long as that holds up, DeSantis has a problem making that argument persuasively. Now, if it turns, you know, based on whatever may come in the weeks and months ahead, then, yeah, that will be a persuasive argument to somebody. He doesn't really have that argument to make right now because the numbers aren't there.
Now, from the Signature Bank Studios, this is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. So much to discuss when it comes to the FBI, but the news this morning is that FBI Director Christopher Wray is relenting. He's going to actually comply with a subpoena from the House Oversight Committee. Oh, gee, thank you.
Thanks. That's nice.
To provide a document with specific allegations that Joe Biden accepted a bribe from a foreign national. The sort of rumor is this has to do with Ukraine. Of course, prosecutor he helped to depose, and the son with the Burisma board seat, and so on and so forth. We don't know that, but that's what's being bandied about. Anyway, he was initially said, well, you can come look at the document, but I'm not going to give you a copy. And that wasn't good enough. He was still potentially under threat of a contempt proceeding. So this morning he's relented and he's going to produce that document. Whether that document has any proof beyond an allegation, don't know. That's why you want to see the document. And if there is not evidence, then you use that as the basis to potentially investigate to see if there is any evidence available that would substantiate a claim. We don't know. We don't know. So that's one matter. And the other matter is this rehabilitation, reputational rehabilitation tour that former FBI Director Jim Comey has been on the last few days, hitting the primetime lineups at CNN and MSNBC to do both image repair.
And to act like a victim and to sell a book.
To do both image repair for himself as well as for those networks and those hosts on those primetime lineups who were party to the last 7 years of Jim Comey and Andy McCabe and the senior leadership of the FBI and elsewhere propagating a fraud on the American people. And this is some of what we've heard from Comey over the last several days.
Do you acknowledge perhaps that some mistakes were made along the way?
Oh, definitely. And they were found 4 years ago by the Inspector General. So there's nothing new in this new document.
What were some of those mistakes from your point of view?
Oh, that the FBI didn't communicate clearly the status of certain sources. They didn't double check certain information before putting it in a court application for a foreign intelligence wiretap and a bunch of others.
And so do you believe now, as some of these politicians call for defunding of the FBI, that that has been corrected and that now the procedures are in place to avoid those kind of mistakes in the future?
I think so. But in complex investigations, there's always going to be mistakes. It doesn't mean the FBI isn't competent, honest, and independent.
So, Director, with some distance now from your time there with that investigation and everything that came into that 2016 election, are there things that you wish you had done differently?
Oh, plenty. I mean, plenty of small things. In the main, I think the FBI did it in the right way during a very difficult time in 2016.
In the main, there's nothing to see here to the extent there is anything to see. It was unearthed 4 years ago. There's nothing new here and nothing that would undermine a substantive belief that the FBI is apolitical, independent, and professional. So let's just move on to demagoguing Trump and the Republican Party in advance of 2024, because I don't want to really talk about the Durham report, and I don't want to be probed on the actual findings, and I know Willie Geist won't do it, and I know Gloria Vanderbilt's kid won't do it, which is why I'm on their programs. So let's focus on Trump as a threat to democracy, the Republican Party's a cult, and the American people need to deliver them a strong rebuke in 2024 and beyond to preserve the independence, professionalism, and integrity of the FBI. Wonderful. Wonderful. Everybody's playing their role on those shows. It's fun to watch the choreography. For more on this, Kevin Brock, former Assistant Director of Intelligence for the FBI, former Principal Deputy Director of the National Counterterrorism Center, joins us again. Kevin, thanks for being with us.
Oh, it's my pleasure, Dan and Amy. And I just want to point out, I'm here this morning because I didn't want to be held in contempt of the Morning Answer.
Right. It's cultural subpoena power that we have, not legal. That's right.
That's right.
So
I am responsive.
Sometimes mistakes will make themselves under your name, but that doesn't mean you're responsible, just like Jim Comey.
Oh, you notice the tone of his voice there. It's just dismissive. Matter of fact, of course mistakes are made. I mean, no big deal. Small mistakes were made. No, he and McCabe and Strzok and others conspired to deny the civil rights of Americans who didn't deserve to be investigated by the FBI. Number one, they made up the investigation out of thin air. And then secondly, defrauded a federal court, FISA court, in seeking aggressively electronic surveillance of a Trump campaign worker, Carter Page. Durham pointed out that Jim Comey was behind pushing that aggressively behind the scenes. Let's go, let's go, let's get this thing going. They had one motivation alone, and that was to make sure that Donald Trump didn't become president of the United States. Well, they were dead set out. They were going to misuse the powers of the FBI to make that happen.
Well, who got to Comey, though? Or was it just Comey's political belief that he would do anything to take down Trump?
I believe so. And, from his statements, even before he was fired, but certainly afterwards, his animus towards Donald Trump is clear. And now he's, as you say, on this rehabilitation tour because he's worried. The Durham before was very damning to him as a, damning to his career as an ethics professor of all things at Columbia.
Sure.
He's
got novelist.
A novelist and Twitter dreamer. He's got this book, A Higher Royalty, I'm sorry, A Higher Loyalty, that he's pushing out there. And so this is a little bit of a sign of a desperation. Dismissive, and move on, nothing to see here. No, there's a lot to see. And I have called for an investigation of those individuals for violating Title 18, Section 242, federal statute, using the color of law to abuse the rights of an American citizen.
Yeah, and, you know, I know you talk to, and we've had this conversation before, you talk to a lot of former FBI officials, colleagues of yours, and mm-hmm. and I wonder, I know they were, you characterized the people, at least you talked to, as upset about what the agency had become under Comey and McCabe, maybe what the agency still is under Ray. But, and we've had some whistleblowers come forward. But I mean, where do things stand internally at the FBI, do you think? Because I know Ray and Comey are doing the, you know, he's an honorable man, Mark Antony business here back and forth to sort of cover each other's ass. But where do you think things stand internally with the rank and file that we're supposed to default to all the time?
What I'm hearing is current FBI under Ray's leadership, there is concern about a hyper focus on social justice issues at the and funding of those at the expense of investigative imperatives. There is a constant drumbeat of celebrating whatever month is. You know, providing things like interpretive dance classes and are you happy seminars and, you know, and most agents and analysts, if you can't be happy and motivated doing what the FBI is supposed to be doing, then you're in the wrong job. If you have to be counseled on how to be happy, then you should probably move on to and excel elsewhere. I talked to agents, they estimate around 75% of the agent population is concerned about the direction of the FBI. There are some things that Christopher Wray has done that I applaud. His stance towards the national security threat of China is solid. I believe his response to the subpoena, which we can talk about, and I'm sure you're going to tee up here, was appropriate, even though all of us would like to see some fire attached to the smoke surrounding the Bidens and their influence peddling. There is a morale issue right now.
On the Hunter Biden investigation, I mean, you know, you just can't, I just can't take Christopher Wray at face value with anything because he stonewalls, he deflects, he dissembles. This thing has been going on for a long time. You had an agent accused of trying to spike the investigation into the laptop. You get middling answers about the investigation sort of any frame on that investigation. And so how are we to believe? Why should we believe anything other than, yeah, everybody in D.C. is working their best to run out the clock or otherwise provide themselves more time and figure out what they'll do or not do after 2024. But everything is not on a law and order timeline going where the facts lead. Everything is on a political timeline.
Yeah, that's a legitimate concern, Dan, especially under this DOJ, which has made it clear that they're making prosecutive decisions based on political agendas, and that's disturbing. It shouldn't be that way, but that's kind of the way it is right now. So, you know, Chairman Comer's concern is a legitimate one. If there's information out there that implicates the Bidens in some type of a bribery, quid pro quo bribery, then is the FBI taking steps to investigate that? That should have been his question. That should have been the briefing behind closed doors. Subpoenaing a standalone source report, a 1023 form, which just regurgitates raw reporting from a confidential human source, would not have been the best strategy that I would have advised him to pursue, because you give the FBI a legitimate claim to say, we can't provide that, and here's why. And I'm going to play a little bit of devil's advocate, because I know everybody wants to know what's in that document, and as do I. I would love to see the Bidens brought to justice for just their influence peddling, let alone an actual bribe. But this is a dangerous document. The Bureau gets hundreds of these from citizens and from sources implicating famous people every day in nefarious things, including congressmen participating in drugs, prostitution, child pornography, and even bribery. But those things usually pan out to be not true, because people have access to Grind, or they got a political agenda that they're pursuing and that type of thing. So if Chairman Comer, if there was a source report out there saying that he was, involved in prostitution, would he want that subpoenaed and made public? Probably not.
Yeah, but here's the problem with that in the modern context. The problem with it is, you're right. Sort of like, I don't know, if a rival campaign cooks up a dossier and then you make that public. That's the kind of thing that shouldn't happen, right? It shouldn't happen, but of course that precedent has been set now. And so, yeah, okay, so I want the document, because I know I'm not going to get anything substantive from you. So I want the document so I can wave it around, so we can investigate it, so we can, get some more air out of this specific allegation that was made by this specific whistleblower. And, then we'll do our Adam Schiff routine. We'll go on our comm channels and say, we're working on it. We're getting there. It's close. We've got a smoking gun that we'll reveal at some point. Well, turnabout is fair play. And then the situation just continues to disintegrate more rapidly because, you can blame the politicians doing tit for tat, but you also blame Christopher Wray for not being an honest broker.
So what we're watching play out is a sumo wrestling match between the legislative and the executive branch at its core. Who's going to win? If the decision is made that it is more important to have this information made public so that Congress can use it for its political aims, okay, that's fine. But just understand, the pursuit of the Bidens through the justice system, filing charges, indictments, convicting and putting behind bars, goes away.
Yeah, but nobody believes it's coming. Nobody believes it's coming under this administration. So we might as well prosecute the thing politically until, and if it happens someday, there's a Justice Department that is interested in law enforcement.
If that is the view that holds sway, then that's where we'll go. Mm-hmm. But my point is, just understand that making public that document will prejudice the case. It will hand the Biden defense team, all kinds of ammunition for getting this dismissed, if it gets that far.
Yeah.
I understand your point. It may not get that far under the Merrick Garland DOJ, but as long as we go into this with eyes wide open, this is where we're heading right now.
I hear you. It's not the place I want it to be, but we have an FBI that won't tell us whether or not they were involved in agitating people who behave badly on January 6th. We have an FBI that obviously perpetrated and continues to perpetrate in the form of Jim Comey a hoax on the American people that was an attempt to take down a president, as you properly said. We have just more things piling in every day now that more of this January 6th video is being released. Going back to that, John Solomon over at Just the News, video of Nancy Pelosi where she, after having done her Joan of Arc routine, having to evacuate, life in danger, so on and so forth. And now we get security footage that shows her exit being potentially staged, with her daughter, the documentarian, filming her departure with security officers to guide her through a corridor. And it just doesn't have the same sort of urgency or threat level that it was characterized as having. I mean, all this stuff comes across as these agencies at the upper echelons perpetrating fraud after fraud against their political enemies.
Strong point. Well, absolutely.
And then didn't James Comey, once he had the dossier, I do recall he went to the Trump Tower, knowing that it was fake, went to the Trump Tower and told candidate Trump at the time that there was an investigation going on. Isn't that a form of intimidation?
Well, he tried to intimidate his way all along. I mean, you're right. He went and said, we've got this unverified salacious report, which he gleefully then used in an affidavit for a FISA
right.
application before the court. On March 20th, 2017, when Comey, still director, testified before Congress and said, I have gotten permission, wink, wink, from Department of Justice to make public the fact that we have an investigation into the Trump campaign. He did that as an insurance policy, thinking that, okay, well, now there's no way they can get rid of me because it would look like, you know, they're getting rid of me because we have this investigation going. Well, that didn't work out very well for him.
In jail.
Worked out, right. And it worked out longer for Comey than it should have. Kevin Brock, former assistant director of Intel for the FBI, former principal deputy director of the National Counterterrorism Center as well. Kevin, thanks as always. Appreciate your time.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you. And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
If you're talking about it, Dan and Amy are talking about it. It's Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. We're talking about Trump v. DeSantis last hour a bit. Certainly the issue of handling of COVID is a point where there are going to be some disagreements and some opportunities for DeSantis, not just with the firing of Fauci, also with Trump's relentless promotion of the vax in spite of what we now understand about the vax, so much of what we understand about the vax.
Yeah, but he was fed a line of BS by Fauci saying, you know, if you get the vax, you can't get COVID, nor can you spread it to others.
I understand.
I believe that.
But I understand and we just had this report yesterday, a super spreader event, CDC conference in April, 181 people infected with COVID.
Yeah, you tweeted that out. I spread
yeah,
that
but,
tweet.
Hey, but just keep saying that I'm vaxxed, so I can't get it or give it. You just keep saying that. Click your heels three times, Dorothy.
They were in a place where they all had the boosters, too, so there were four shots in.
So the point is, say, you can take credit for Operation Warp Speed. We did what we thought was right as fast as we could do it, and it did save lives, particularly as we understand for older people with comorbidities. Okay. But Trump, because he is just preternaturally imprecise with language, has just been a cheerleader. He comes across as a cheerleader for the vaccine, generally speaking, and without qualifications, and that provides an opening to DeSantis. So that's one issue. But the other issue that's a bit of a surprise could potentially be border security. And I mean an issue for DeSantis to prosecute against Trump.
Oh, really?
Well, here was DeSantis on New Hampshire radio yesterday, attendant to his first visit to New Hampshire. And the question was about the name calling and so forth. But DeSantis offers a tell in getting beyond the name calling to talk about points of departure between the two of them on issues. And yes, he mentions Fauciism, but also the border.
I think it's so petty. I think it's so juvenile. I don't think that's what voters want. And honestly, I think that his conduct, which he's been doing for years now, I think that's one of the reasons he's not in the White House now, because I think he alienated too many voters for things that really don't matter. So I don't get in the gutter on any of that. Now, look, we do have substantive differences, and I think President Trump did a lot of great things, and I still give him credit for the great things he did, but he's attacking me on policy where we have a disagreement, and I'm the one that's in the right on this. For example, he's saying Governor Andrew Cuomo in New York handled COVID better than Florida did under my leadership, and yet people fled Cuomo's lockdowns to come to Florida by the tens of thousands, probably hundreds of thousands. Florida boomed as a result of being one of the nation's foremost freedom zones. We fought Trump's own administration to make sure our kids could be in school and our businesses could be open. And so he's attacking me siding with Andrew Cuomo in New York over me, I think that's a huge mistake. He's also attacked me for opposing an immigration amnesty bill that he tried to push through when he was in Congress, and that's true. It was a 2 million amnesty for illegal aliens. I opposed that because I was upholding America First principles. He ran in 2016 saying that he would oppose amnesty for illegal aliens, and then he came in 2018 and he tried to ram it through. So I think that the substance, people want to see the substantive mm-hmm. debate. I think that's totally legitimate. But the juvenile name-calling and all that stuff, that's not the way I roll.
But forgetting the name-calling for a second and focusing on that issue, I mean, the question of how people will receive that contrast. So DeSantis wasn't complete in what he said about the quote-unquote amnesty deal. But he is right that in 2018, you'll recall this, Trump put an offer on the table, and the offer was $25 billion in funding to build a wall on the southern border. Mm-hmm. And as was reported at the time, he would offer the Dreamers protection from deportation and an incentive for citizenship perhaps in 10 to 12 years. So a pathway to citizenship into 10 to 12 years and protection from deportation. He did it again, something different, in 2019 after DeSantis was out of Congress, when it was over the quote-unquote government shutdown, which, of course, we know that's a melodramatic malapropism. But it was, I'll extend DACA, you know, if we get things, if we get this issue of funding for the border wall, but this government shutdown, you know, the temporary shutdown of non-essential government agencies, which is about, you know, I don't know, 15% of the federal government. I mean, it's such a joke. So, but that's not the point. The point is that he was willing to deal on this. And DeSantis is saying that deal that he put on the table, $25 billion for sort of a vague protection from deportation for Dreamers, as well as an incentive to pursue citizenship over the course of a decade, let's say, that's something that I was willing to negotiate. You know, he makes deals. You may say that's a decent deal if you get that border wall built. You may say it's not, but that's a difference of opinion between the two. 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line. 64636DA, turnkey.pro text line. And maybe Trump believes that he has a little exposure on that issue because this week he released a policy pronouncement on the matter of border security. Now, this is also in part in response to the situation at the border with Title 42 gone and things spiraling further out of control at the border. So the timing works on a couple of levels. Here's what Trump said in the video that he released.
As part of my plan to secure the border on day one of my new term in office, I will sign an executive order making clear to federal agencies that under the correct interpretation of the law, going forward, the future children of illegal aliens will not receive automatic U.S. citizenship. It's things like this that bring millions of people to our country, and they enter our country illegally. My policy will choke off a major incentive for continued illegal immigration, deter more migrants from coming, and encourage many of the aliens Joe Biden has unlawfully let into our country to go back to their home countries. They must go back. Nobody could afford this. Nobody could do this. And even morally, it's so wrong. My order will also end their unfair practice known as birth tourism, where hundreds of thousands of people from all over the planet squat in hotels for their last few weeks of pregnancy to illegitimately and illegally obtain U.S. citizenship for the child, often to later exploit chain migration to jump the line and get green cards for themselves and their family members. It's a practice that's so horrible and so egregious, but we let it go forward. At least one parent will have to be a citizen or a legal resident in order to qualify. We will secure our borders and we will restore our sovereignty starting on day one.
So who do you like better on the border? 312-642-5600, Turnkey.pro answer line. 64636-DA, Turnkey.pro text line. Not only did DeSantis vote down that proposed deal, border wall funding for...
Dreamers?
For, yeah, right, for 1.8, a pathway to citizenship for 1.8 million Dreamers. He also has, along with Governor Abbott, been making the point in no uncertain terms to sanctuary cities and to well-heeled places with champagne socialists like Martha's Vineyard.
That was great. The 12 hours they'll never forget. They forged so many close bonds that they're pen pals now, and yeah. There was tears when a few of them left.
No, it was wonderful.
We thank you for our time now. Now, please get off our island because you're bringing down property values, and mm-hmm. We have tourists coming. Bye-bye. Here's a bag of fruit.
What about that? Who do you like?
312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line. You could also text us at 64636. Type in DA, then a quick comment.
Trump calling for an end to birthright citizenship. That's a big good proposal. But you know, he's moved around on the issue depending on what other interests he had on the time. You could see that happen again. DeSantis seems a little bit more strident on it, doesn't he? Maybe you like more stridency. Maybe you like more of a deal to be made to advance the flag on the border security front.
Well, $25 billion in exchange for, you know, Dreamers becoming, you know, a pathway to citizenship for them. I'm for that. I always have been, because I know Dreamers. When I lived in El Paso, they didn't know they were Dreamers at the time. But if as long as they have not committed a crime, they're not sucking off the government teat when it comes to, you know, social programs that are out there, and they have a job.
Well, this is where
they serve in the military.
Well, this is where the realpolitik comes in, because you know, Trump was dealing on something where he probably recognized, look, there's no appetite in D.C. to deport Dreamers.
No.
So I'm conceding something. I'm providing form to something that is functionally the case. And if I can get $25 billion in border wall funding out of it, that's a good deal for the country. And I think there's a fair argument to be made in advance of that proposal. It also leaves one wondering, well, will Trump make bad deals on the border? We didn't get everything done that was promised at the border under President Trump. And I know he's not singularly culpable for that, but he is the president of the United States. That was central to his campaign. He could have spent political capital in a focused manner in the early days of administration, where they had control of both the House and the Senate, and made the point to both McConnell and Ryan, this is going to get done. You are going to pass this, or we're going to have problems on the other range of issues you want to address. And he didn't do that. A rookie mistake? You would call it whatever you want, but the question then becomes, DeSantis, even though he's just a governor, does have a record on border security, both as a member of Congress and as a governor, as we just described. So does Trump. Whose approach do you like better?
Trump's, you know, said yesterday on Hannity, you know, give him 6 months and everything will go back to the way it was, and that he could solve the Ukraine war over a lunch.
Verlon, Southside, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
When it comes to DeSantis, talk is talk. He hasn't proven anything. Donald Trump had something called the three pillars. One of them I can't remember right now, but he was getting the wall built. If he would have had another 4 years, it probably would have been built by hook or crook, through tariffs or whatever.
Yeah, but the promise wasn't I'll build a wall in my second term, was it?
No, as far as I heard, he was going to get the wall built. If he would have got 2 terms, it would have been built. That's just my belief system. He was going to end chain migration, and it was another pillar for that deal for the 1.8 million Dreamers. And I don't want to hear anything from anybody about giving them amnesty when Ronald Reagan gave 3 million illegals amnesty. At least he was going to get more out of the deal than Ronald Reagan was going to get.
Thanks for the call, Verlon.
And we got a lot of text messages on this. Dan and Amy, my brain tells me DeSantis is a logical choice, but But I know if I voted for him over Trump in the primary, I would feel like I betrayed Trump.
Mm-hmm.
Trump is actually running against Merrick Garland's DOJ. That's another one.
Mm-hmm.
And here's Dan and Amy. I wish Trump would not run. His ego is so huge, and I am so tired of his stupid off-color comments.
What about the migrant situation here in Chicago? Speaking of border security and American sovereignty and the expenditure of resources, I know a lot of Chicago residents are none too happy with the $51 million that has been allocated by the city council to be spent on housing for migrants, although it still got two-thirds of the city council support.
Yeah, and Wright College, you know, they were upset about it. They had a town hall meeting. But last night, people gathered on the southwest side because they made this announcement yesterday that they're going to house 500 migrants at Daly College, you know, just until August. And they had a town hall last night.
When do citizens of the United States of America come first?
How about this? Give them all these politicians' addresses and put them in their backyards, in their basements, in their houses.
I appreciate the sentiment, but of course, those are the politicians that the collective wisdom of the city installed.
Yeah, and guess what? The place was absolutely packed. Yeah. Yet again for that town hall at Daly College. And guess what's happening this morning, Dan? At about 9 a.m., they're starting to move them in there. So they just had these perfunctory. I know, but I'm just saying that, you know, why even bother having a town hall? Because they don't really care what you say anyway, because they're going to do what they want to do. And these chancellors at Wright College and at Daly think that they're going to be out by August 1st so they can serve the students that are moving in. And that are going to be going in using those classrooms for classes. So I don't think that's going to happen. It's money, man.
I heard an interesting story from a very reliable source about the migrants that are being housed at the shuttered Standard Club. Did you forget about that? They repurposed the Standard Club to house migrants.
I forgot about that. Yeah. I did.
One of the migrants tested positive for the Zika virus.
Really? Shut her down. Lock it down.
Well, I mean, again, that's
mosquito,
you know,
right?
Mostly something that is of concern to pregnant women, as we remember from the Zika virus scare.
Right.
But nonetheless, the larger point is, are we bringing the possibility of public health issues and just beyond cleanliness? Are we bringing the possibility of public health issues to the city?
What we learned at CPS is that these migrants that are coming here can be enrolled in school because there's still a week and a half left, but also in summer school, and they don't have to have the same immunization,
that
we do.
That.
I know, but there's 16 different shots that we had to get for our kids in order for them to go to public school, and they are exempt from all of it.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. So, that sounds fair. Yeah, sure.
Well, you know, we'll see how it goes, but I guess it's just the price you pay to be a welcoming city. John in Portage Park, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Good morning. My idea was like in front of Wrigley Field where they have the bricks and you paid for the bricks so you could get your bricks. My idea for the wall would be this 20 feet of wall is sponsored by, you know, this company. You know what I mean?
And yeah, then so you get your engraved, you know, right. It's like the bricks outside of Comiskey where you get, and I've got
yes.
one, where you get
you
your name.
One?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Exactly.
Yeah. Where is it?
Yeah, it's a good idea. Thanks for
Wait,
that.
Wait, where's your brick located?
I mean, I can't give you like the...
The coordinates?
Yeah, I'm not calling it an airstrike. It's just that, you know, out there in the front.
Okay.
You know, on
How
the
much
point.
You have to pay for that?
I don't remember. You know, it's a long time ago. Michael Southside, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Morning, Dan. Morning, Amy. Thank you both for taking my call. It's amazing how quickly public opinion on the South Side is turning against Brandon Johnson. During the election, people called in the WVON to complain about black politicians who were supporting Paul Vallis. Yesterday, people were blasting Brandon Johnson. So the guy in office
Yeah.
And now they're complaining about him.
Sure they are. But those, thanks for the call.
They'll vote for him again anyway.
Well, sure. And they talked about that a little bit with the people who spoke out at the city council meeting. And there's an easy way to mollify those who are a bit disenchanted temporarily. Reparations. They'll push the reparations button, and at least from a PR perspective, and get everybody back in the fold in advance of reparations. So, again, cut me in or cut it out. Just wait. Be patient. We'll cut you in. Dan and Amy, Chicago's Morning Answer.
This is the morning show. More Chicago radio listeners are choosing. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer. Now, from the Signature Bank Studios, this is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. Where do our rights come from? From where do we derive our rights? Sort of a foundational question, right? It's interesting, some sort of self-styled libertarian-ish conservatives ironically think our rights come from government programs. How many instances of this have we seen? Get the government out of the marriage business by getting the government in the marriage business to redefine it. Get the government out of the relationship between myself and my doctor. By setting up an assisted suicide program. Sort of a conundrum, isn't it? We're going to enshrine our individual sovereignty by establishing a government program to do it. That doesn't strike you as a contradiction in terms. It should. We've talked about assisted suicide a number of times. The so-called death with dignity movement, mainly with Wesley Smith. He's written a lot on the topic. But we've got now 10 states that have the government involved in helping you kill yourself or helping family members help you kill yourself. And I know what people think is they hearken back to when this was more of a national debate in the days of Jack Kevorkian. And you have these terrible situations where people are afflicted with terrible diseases and there is no hope, at least that's what the professionals would say, no hope in some of these cases for a person to get better. And often that's true. Think of somebody with ALS, for example. But there's that reality, and then there's institutionalizing government power to deliver the dose. Because I don't know how many programs we have to have on how many fronts before it starts to resonate with people, particularly conservatives. That every government program is not only subject to, it's almost incentivized for mission creep. And so that's what's happened. This is only for people with a debilitating disease where there is no hope and the pain is unbearable. Right. And these are very sympathetic situations. But, people are in terrible situations, suffering terribly. And of course, the natural instinct is to have great empathy and sympathy for them and say, well, if you can't go on, I understand. Okay. But then when it's institutionalized in government, like it is up there in Canada, their MAID program. I love these Orwellian acronyms. I mean, good grief. National healthcare, the government-run healthcare in Britain is NICE. That's the acronym. And MAID. I'm just going to help, clean you up right out of here. Oh, and I mean, an aid program.
That's nice.
For example, a depressed man was euthanized for hearing loss because he refused to wear his cochlear implant. Is that what you had in mind for the government aiding and abetting people killing themselves?
Millions of Americans have cochlear implants. Not a reason.
Getting down into kids. We've told you these stories, and you may say, well, those are outliers. Well, the problem is when you have a government agency in business to kill people, that's what they do. And they look for outlier cases to expand their mission field. And that's what's happening. Our next guest tells us a story of a Navy veteran who wanted to go one way, wanted to be out of here, wanted to leave this mortal coil. And now he's going the other way as part of a group that is litigating California's End of Life Options Act, alleging it discriminates against people with disabilities. For more on this, we're pleased to be joined by F. Billy McMorris, Academic Director for the National Journalism Center and a contributing editor for The Spectator. Mr. McMorris, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Dan. Thanks, Amy.
Tell us the story of Lonnie Van Hook.
So Lonnie Van Hook is a quadriplegic from Oakland, a Navy veteran, and he was contemplating moving from California to Oregon to go and end his life. And he happened to collapse en route to Oregon and was brought to a medical facility in California. And when they found out the reason that he was going to Oregon, they were like, oh, Lonnie, you can starve yourself to death right here. We can do that here. So it wasn't until the intervention of...
Boy, that is good news, doctor. Yeah.
But Mr. Van Hook has joined these disability groups that are saying that for disabled people like Lonnie, the standard of care for suicide prevention goes out the window. So disabled people are getting a different set of treatment than if I were to call up my doctor and say, I'm going to kill myself, authorities would do everything in their power to stop me from doing that. But when Mr. Van Hook expresses suicidal ideation, he is aided because the doctors look at him and they go, well, you're a quadriplegic, you have a low quality of life, you have a terminal disease, ergo, we don't need to provide you suicide prevention, we need to provide you suicide. But don't worry, it is totally up to you. And I think you nailed you hit the nail on the head when you discussed how we need a government program to come in and litigate these sorts of things and how it's actually inviting the government into the end-of-life business. But what's even more funny than that is that this is tort reform. Assisted suicide bills are made to make sure that doctors can't be prosecuted for helping patients kill themselves. And that's what people don't realize about. Every time they come up with a fancy acronym like MAID or Death with Dignity, what it's really covering up is they're trying to help doctors escape prosecution and litigation from grieving family members who see these doctors betraying the Hippocratic Oath in order to bring about the death of their patients.
Well, how many states have legalized assisted suicide?
So currently it is 10 states and the District of Columbia. And Nevada could be looking at becoming the next state to legalize it. And what's funny is many of these, as funny as this can be, when assisted suicide first arrived on the map, it was through, litigation in a few legislation in a few, far left states like Oregon, but as well as through litigation, people suing saying that their doctor won't kill them, and it's a human right that they should be able to kill themselves with the assistance of a doctor. And that's how Canada went about legalizing assisted suicide. So Mr. Van Hook and these disability groups are basically trying to use the liberal playbook in order to save lives here. They're basically saying, hey, you guys are discriminating against us since somebody living with a terminal disease is ipso facto a disabled person. And you're creating a two-tiered medical system based off of the prognostications of a few doctors. So it's going to be interesting to see how this plays out, because thus far, legal challenges have been to assisted suicide have been thrown out on technical standing grounds, but this whole case in California is based off of a very progressive reading of the law.
And rather than St. Jude's, rather than like have children's hospitals, I'm thinking of Margot Thomas, right, doing those commercials for St. Jude Children's Hospitals, raising money for kids with terminal disease to aid them and so forth. Going the other way in Canada, Abel Peltier was only 4 years old when his mother began petitioning the Canadian Parliament to allow a physician to take his life in a medically assisted suicide. He has a rare condition called Mendick syndrome. It's incurable, although medications can manage certain aspects of the condition. So is that when people are thinking about, this is my point about bringing up Kevorkian in the opening, they think about that, they think about the elderly person who's probably a short timer and maybe is in excruciating pain. Are you thinking about four-year-olds with a terminal, with a serious illness, maybe a terminal illness, but maybe there's aspects you can manage, and that person has potentially a lot more time if you can mitigate some of the symptoms and alleviate some of the pain. But hey, here we are. We're ready to move if you are.
That's exactly right. When Canada first was forced by its Supreme Court to legalize assisted suicide, only about 1,000 people used it. And within 5 years, it had gone to, it had increased tenfold. It had become one of the leading causes of death in Canada in the middle of the COVID-19 pandemic. And that is not because terminal illnesses suddenly shot up. It was because Canada started with, all right, only if you're in the last few years of your life and you're super elderly. And within 5 years, they had expanded the criteria.
To a four-year-old.
And
I mean, potentially.
They're on the verge of legalizing it for minors who they said would never be affected by this.
Right.
They are on the verge of legalizing it for people who are mentally ill. So,
right.
Hey, have severe depression. Go ahead. We will.
The gallows are right out back. Yeah, right. Absolutely.
And not only that, the Canadian health system is cheering the fact that this assisted suicide program saves them hundreds of millions of dollars every year in health care expenditures.
Of course, people are burdens. I get it. Yeah, especially kids. Think they're going to be a burden for 60, 70, 80 years maybe, and you can avoid those burdens. That's wonderful. It's terribly enlightened. The assisted suicide with kids to mature minors, so meaning with parental consent. And, parental consent, like that's the end-all, be-all these days. The same parents that are consenting to have their children mutilated because they have succumbed to the siren song of the trans movement and so on and so forth. I mean, without getting into that, just the idea of parental consent to deprive a living human being of their God-given rights, not government program conferred rights. And that's a problem, at least it should be in this country if it's not in Canada.
Well, we've already seen several states take up legislation that says that if parents do not consent to their child transitioning, that it is tantamount to child abuse because
right.
You're getting in the way of your child's relationship with the doctor. I could easily envision some lawyers out there in a couple years, if we allow the assisted suicide juggernaut to continue, suing and alleging child abuse because these parents won't consent to having their child killed by assisted suicide. That sounds like a ridiculous scenario, but I'm sure in Canada 5 years ago, it seemed very ridiculous that minors could ever be even contemplated as being able to win assisted suicide rights, as they call them.
And in the West in general, we're talking about the mental health crisis among young people coming out of COVID. You had the Surgeon General, Dr. Vivek Murthy, talking about deleterious impact on children's mental state that social media has, the continuous use of social media. So, boy, we're going to have a lot of people lined up at the mill, it sounds like, if the pro-death lobby has their way.
Yes, these are called deaths with despair when a doctor is involved, but all of a sudden they become death with dignity when somebody commits suicide under the loving gaze of a national health system.
And some people do it in the name of climate change, too, I'm sure. Because people aren't having kids, you know, they say, because they're trying to save the planet. So do you think that'll be a factor in on it?
Oh, my goodness. Climate despair becoming a factor. I guess that would be considered a mental illness. So we'll see how Canada handles that one. But We look north if you want to see what the future looks like under an aid in dying. All of these protections that the Death with Dignity folks promise will be in their regime, they all roll away very, very quickly. And, you know, luckily in the U.S., it is limited to a few states and the District of Columbia. But if you keep the ball rolling on this, Canada is definitely looking like the way of the future.
Yeah, and it's exactly the conversation we had yesterday with Dr. Jonathan Allen about nudging and the use by the medical profession of behavioral sciences to sort of nudge people in the right direction. This is what was happening in California with Mr. Van Hook, which, you know, yay, it's your call, but, you know, you should probably maybe think about going this way. Uh-huh. Yeah, the soft tyranny of the medical profession these days. It's a pretty dystopian stuff, and we appreciate you documenting it. He is F. Billy McMorris, Academic Director for the National Journalism Center, contributing editor for The Spectator as well. Thank you for joining us. Appreciate it.
Thank you for having me, Dan, Amy.
Thank you, and he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
Listen to Dan and Amy on your smartphone. Download the AM560 mobile app today at 560theanswer.com/mobile.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. 339,000 jobs in May. Boy, that's got to be depressing for Jay Powell. His goal in life is to knock 2 million people out of their jobs because apparently he thinks that we live in a Phillips curve world, even though the job market is saying we don't. To help us unpack this and other macro matters, please be joined by James Perry, founder and CIO of Perry International Capital Partners. Jim, thanks for joining us as always. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Dan. Good morning, Amy.
So if you believe these job numbers, which is always a caveat, and then everybody talks about them the day it happens, and then when they get revised down by half 2 months from now, nobody remembers. But let's just say, for sake of argument, that the job market remains fairly tight. That's not great news for Jay Powell. How that impacts what he does this month with rates? How?
Right. To your first point, you know, I've never been a big fan of the non-farm payroll data because to your point as well, you know, it gets revised. The last 2 months before this, the revisions were 100% different than the headline figures, and nobody looks at them. So, you know, the market kind of reacts a little bit in the wrong way, but we all have imperfect data that we have to deal with. So we have to go with the headlines. And when you think of that, you know, 339,000 jobs is, I don't think it's unexpected, because all of this underlying information that we've seen about the economy, really since kind of February, has been surprisingly strong. There's a, there's an index that comes out by Citibank, which is called the Economic Surprise Index. And more than three quarters of the data that comes, all this sort of soft stuff and strong stuff, it's higher than expected. So you're getting an economy that is growing, except that it's bifurcated, right? The rich are getting richer and the poor are getting poorer. Disposable income at the household level, you know, I think I saw a statistic this week that something like 90% of the people that make under $100,000 a year are living paycheck to paycheck, right? And, you know, you look at things like the number of people that actually are responsible for demand. You know, I think there's a number. I was looking at it the other day. Hold on a second. Something like 70% of GDP is consumer spending, and 75% of that is from people who have savings accounts and wealth, and they own something. So rich are getting richer, poor are getting poorer, and the economy is inflating. And that's going to be a problem for Mr. Powell, to your point.
And so what? So does he go beyond 25 basis points? Does he extend the his commentary, or does he offer commentary suggesting that we may have to extend rate hikes a little further than originally conceived?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of politics involved here. You know, this whole debt ceiling mess was problematic, and we can get into that in a minute if you want. But
Jim, hold on just a second. I'll tell you what, we got to put you on hold for just a minute because we have House Speaker Kevin McCarthy, I think, is joining us now, and we need to talk to him about the debt ceiling deal. So we'll put Jim on hold. Do we have Kevin McCarthy? All right. Pleased to be joined by House Speaker Kevin McCarthy. Speaker McCarthy, thanks so much for joining us. Appreciate it.
Well, thanks for having me. I'm going to be out there today at the Lake County Federation dinner, raising some money for some Republicans.
Yeah, I heard that from friends. People up there are excited. Obviously, the timing couldn't be better for them on the heels of this deal. That should generate some enthusiasm. So, you know, give us your broad strokes on the deal that is now going to the president's desk.
Well, remember where we came from, and remember where past deals were. Many times, even when Republicans had control of the Senate and the House, they would just raise the debt limit without making any changes. Now, we control the House by a five-seat majority, and the president said at the very beginning that he would not even talk to us, that Schumer on George Stephanopoulos months ago said, this will be a clean debt ceiling. The Republicans are just going to raise the limit. Well, we said we wouldn't do that. I went to the president February 1st, said, let's sit down. Let's talk about this. We've got to spend less money than we spent last year. We've got to have different focuses. We've got to take some of this waste money and pull it back. We've got to have work requirements. He said that would never happen. You know, at the end of the day, you didn't get everything you want. But what was very interesting watching the Senate, you had some Senate Republicans voting no because they wanted more money, even with the Democrats. And so what we got in this, for the first time that I've watched in a long history, we will spend less money than we spent before. We plussed up defense, but some people wanted even higher. We plussed up our veterans, and then our non-defense funding outside of veterans is lower than the 2022 level. We got work requirements where this means for able-bodied people with no dependents and you're on welfare, we're going to help you find a job. We watched it. Democrats said that was a red line. We could never do it. We got it in. We got it in there. We actually put caps in there for 6 years so government can't grow out of control. And then we did something that hasn't been done. If you take all of the history of Congress, a rescission is pulling back money you had appropriated but wasn't spent. They've only done $26 billion in our life. We did $29 billion, took that COVID money. We stopped $400 million from our hardworking taxpayers going to the CDC Global Fund, meaning we were sending our money to China. We did something for what a lot of us understand. How do we cut the red tape and grow again? Well, what we did was we reformed NEPA, Environmental Review. That hasn't been happening in 40 years. So you don't study 7 years to build a new road. You cap that at 1 and 2 years. And then we're making Congress be accountable. If you don't do your simple job of passing all the appropriation bills by January 1st, you got a 1% cut across the board. This is just the beginning. It's just turning of the ship. And you know what the president did? He wouldn't let us look at the entire budget. We had to do all that in the area of just 11% of the budget could we really even talk about.
Well, one concern that conservatives might have is that the hiring of IRS agents, is that going to be happening?
Yes. Okay, great question. And I think this has not been explained well enough. Okay, the 87,000 IRS agents isn't happening in a year. It's happening over a number of years. So what I can tell you right now is zero agents have been hired. So they had programmed $1.4 billion to be spent hiring agents this year. No, we took the $1.4 billion away. So no agents will get hired this year. Then we got another $20 billion of that money to reprogram to other items. So when we get to appropriations. Now, one of the areas I think we should spend the money on instead, let's get some border agents. Let's secure our border. I think that's a better use than hiring IRS agents. So no, we didn't get all the money for the IRS, but they're not hiring anybody. We got $21 billion of that, and we'll come back next year to get the next segment and the next segment. You know, the one thing people should watch about me, if you watch the speaker's race, I never give up, and I'm never going to give up. But I'm going to take all that I can get today, stop them from doing anything this year, and come back next year for the rest.
I think what you said, the phrase you said, you know, this is the beginning of the turning of the ship. I think this is where some conservatives got a bit lost and have uncontrolled expectations here, because you know you're a slim majority, one chamber, and as you said, you moved the Biden from dismissing you out of hand and from the political class thinking that nothing was going to come out of the House to being forced to the table. But you're not going to be able to undo all these things that were done legally through the legislative process, you know, and people forget the backdoor Green New Deal had 17 Republican senators sign on. You can't just undo that with a wave of a wand in this debt ceiling contest. This is going to take time. And this is sort of foreshadowing for some of the important fiscal issues that are going to be front and center in the 2024 campaign. And people just need to understand that you didn't get to $32 trillion and $120 trillion in unfunded liabilities overnight, and you're not going to unwind them in one debt ceiling deal.
No, and you're not going to look at 11% of what causes the increase in funding and solve it all through there. But you're 100% right here. But think for one moment what this bill is. This is the largest cut in American history. So even when Republicans were all in control, they would vote to increase spending on a debt ceiling. You watched what happened last when they did the omnibus bill. Well, that 1% cut, we just got the Democrats to agree never to have that happen again. If we put a bill on the floor just by itself for work requirements, it would pass the House, but it would never be law. I could vote for bills to put all my wish list in it, but it doesn't become law. Everything I just told you became law. We passed a bill that repealed all 87,000 IRS agents, that they don't hire those for years. But what we just did was stop them from hiring any and take $20 billion of that. So come back tomorrow and take the rest.
Mm-hmm.
And we just got the Democrats to join us and vote with that.
And
so now they're on record.
And so when you the Freedom Caucus and the press conference they have, and some of people making, you know, threats about your speakership, I mean, do you just take that as and in spirit, I'm largely with the Freedom Caucus, but you'll have to operate on reality too, which I think you are. And so do you just take that, say, you know, hey, people vote their conscience. You want to vote against this deal? That's fine, and we'll live to fight another day. We move on. Is that sort of your attitude?
That's my attitude. But look, I'm where the Freedom Caucus is. They're going further, but I don't want to be on the wrong side of history. When I had a moment to cut $2.1 trillion, the largest Congress has ever done, I don't want to say I wanted it better, so I voted no with the Democrats. What I want to do is make that change. Grab everything you can, show that we can govern, because, you know, there's only a couple options. You can have this, or if this failed, you know they would pass a clean debt ceiling. The Democrats have a discharge petition with every Democrat on it. They only need five more Republicans to go there. We know what their plan was, to do nothing. We forced them to do something they never would do. Work requirements. We even have something called PAYGO. We took this language from President Trump's executive order. What this says is, if the president wants to create a new program, a new regulation, and it costs more than $100 million, he can't do it without offsetting it, cutting government somewhere else. Now, it's not perfectly written. We took it the way Trump had it, because it gives a waiver for OMB. But now we got Democrats to vote that, put that in law, and when the approps come back, clean it up and make it even tighter. Take the win and come back to win again.
Yeah, yes. And just on one other topic before we let you go, I know you're a busy guy. The backing the play of Jim Comer, the House Oversight Chairman, with respect to that showdown with Christopher Wray over the subpoena they issued, and now Christopher Wray and the FBI are going to comply with that subpoena. I mean, to me, I hope, and I hope the response you're getting is appreciation for the speaker intervening to back the play of his committee chairman to go after the FBI and wherever the facts lead with respect to Biden Incorporated. And I hope that continues. I hope that's your attitude and the caucus's attitude going forward.
That is 100% of my attitude driven. We've got to change this FBI. We have had reports after reports going after Americans when they shouldn't. And I'm going to tell you what, another place we're going to have to look for spending, the FBI wants to spend millions upon billions of dollars for a new one big headquarters, create a new big Pentagon. That is not best suited for the FBI. The FBI should be out across in smaller offices across America helping fight crime, not going after Americans looking for others. So I don't think that's a good use of our money. You're going to find time after again, we have a strategy. And the one thing you could find is we're going to keep moving forward with each time further. Look, they underestimated I could come speaker. They underestimated could we pass the Parents' Bill of Rights. They underestimated could we get a border security bill. Could we get a debt ceiling? Well, you know what? We did it by showing that we can put the country on a new path. Look, there are Republicans in the Senate that want to keep spending more. Being able to thread the needle, keeping people together. I know people are going to be upset on both sides, but I'm going to keep my eye on the American people, and we're going to keep winning for them each day and coming back fighting for them each day.
He is House Speaker Kevin McCarthy. Tonight, he is at the Lincolnshire Marriott in Lake County in Lincolnshire. Dinner's at 7 o'clock. I don't know if tickets are available. Probably not, but maybe you could get an SRO ticket. He's like, you know, he's the political Taylor Swift in town this weekend. Speaker,
come
Kevin,
on out. I want to see you all.
Speaker, yes. McCarthy, thanks so much for joining us. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Take care.
Thank you. Thank you for what you do. And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
It's what Chicago is talking about. It's Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan and Amy on AM 560, The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson.
Open mic! Open mic Friday! Call in now! Open mic Friday!
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. That theme music means it's time for Open Mic Friday. Taking your calls with comments, compliments, concerns, general crack pottery. We'll take it all, but before we get to your calls, we bring our friend Jim Perry from Perry International Capital Partners back on, since we had to so rudely cut him off. But, you know, there's a pecking order to these things. When Dennis Prager, Mike Gallagher comes to town, you know, they throw me out of the studio, too, and they take over. So there's just a pecking order to these things. Jim, sorry about that.
Oh, don't worry. I'm honored to be bumped by the Speaker of the House.
It's great to fodder for a cocktail party, isn't it?
It doesn't happen every day.
Yeah. Exactly.
Exactly.
You're fourth really in you're fourth in line to the presidency as far as we're concerned. All right.
Yeah, I think that was really funny. He's the Taylor Swift of politics. That's okay. You know, I'm not.
So, give us just sort of we were talking a bit about the jobs number beating the street estimates at 340,000 and what Jay Powell may do in June and beyond. I mean, just give us your handle on where you think things stand for the remainder of this year and what you would be telling listeners to do if they were your clients.
Right. We'll jump to the elevator sales pitch real quick, right? So here's the deal. You know, a lot of people say the strength of the labor market has been surprising, but it's not. You know, I mean, 300,000 jobs, 330,000 jobs is a lot, and it's coming across all spectrums of the economy. So it's construction, it's leisure and hospitality, it's healthcare. And, you know, everybody in those jobs is getting raises, right? So pilots, nurses, railroad workers, construction guys, you name it. And the biggest problem, and I have a ton of respect for Speaker McCarthy. I think anybody that works that hard in that job, in that position, trying to shrink government, you know, a lot of people couldn't do that, including me. It's a tough job. So I've got a lot of respect for him, and I'm glad he's doing the job he's doing. And everybody, of course, wants it to be better. Especially the markets. And that's the biggest problem, you know? I mean, what he didn't address, and he can't because it's politics, but, you know, government spending went up $10 trillion, you know, in the last 2.5 years. And a lot of that money is still in the system, and it's not going away yet. And I'm not in the world of politics. I'm in the world of economics, and economics matter, you know? And that much money in the system is creating inflation. And all these jobs numbers, there's only one piece of information that matters the most, Dan, and that is that wage growth is growing at 6.5%. And everything in the service sector of the economy is inflating because of it. And all of those people that make 100 grand a year or less, who are living paycheck to paycheck, have their household disposable income being destroyed. And that is unsustainable. And if the Fed doesn't raise rates this summer more, this inflation problem is not going to go away.
All right. And do one thing, just a note from your missive this week. It's your view that the run on regional banks is behind us. I mean, there may be other moments in the banking sector in the coming months. But in terms of some sort of collapse of that sector within the banking system, you think we're beyond it?
Well, I do, largely because the government contained it and, you know, put some of these bad treasury positions on their balance sheet. So the balance sheet went up again. But, you know, like I said, and we've talked about many times, Dan, you know, recessions happen when the Fed raises rates. And the Fed raises rates because prices are rising. And prices are rising, so rates are going to go up. So the weakest, poorly managed, worst positioned businesses that have to borrow money are going to be in trouble. So it's not going to be a surprise to see somebody else, either a real estate developer or a hedge fund or a bank go out of business. You're going to have some problems as rates go up. But, you know, if inflation is the fight, right? I mean, everybody tells me, oh, it's so great that CPI has gone from 9% to 5%. And I say, well, yeah, that is great. But the fact is that, you know, before the pandemic, it was at 1.5%, and now it's 5. That's 3 times higher than the Fed wants. So if they're gonna try to really keep the inflation fight going, they should hike rates in June and July and get rates back up to 7%. Otherwise, inflation is not going to go away.
Jim Perry, founder, Perry International Capital Partners. Jim, thanks as always. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Dan. Thanks, Amy.
Thank you. And he joined us on our Turnkey.Pro Answer Line, just in case. And you guys are about to join us on our Turnkey.Pro Answer Line, but I have a bone to pick with you, Mr. Proft.
Okay.
Why aren't you following me on Twitter?
You're on Twitter?
Oh, that's I mean, I know my account was hijacked by this person who's getting paid by some Democratic operative, and I don't know who it is. And I've tried to negotiate to get it back, but I started new. I was able to get my Twitter handle back. Amy Jacobson, JACOBSON. But I have to, everyone's got to refollow me again. I hope you're tapping keys to follow me on Twitter. Mm. Dan, are you? Hello?
I want to make sure there's no hate speech in your account for it.
And also, I know that you talked about Biden falling down, but, you know, when he fell 3 times up the plane, and then when he fell when he was riding his bike and he forgot to unclip, you know, because I cycle too, that, you know, I laughed at that. But yesterday,
At Brandon Falls, that's where he fell.
That's right. But I honestly, yesterday I didn't laugh because I thought, uh-oh. Because he can get concussed. He can bleeding on the brain. And then this morning we could have had Kamala Harris as our president.
Well, he's, I know, don't think I mean, I'm, thankfully he's fine. And And yes, of course, nobody wants him to be injured. And there was a, I mean, the notable gasp in the audience when he went down. But you know, he got up, he brushed himself off.
Did you play the gasp when he went down?
That's for like the.
It's for the
lobotomized media to obsess about. We focused on, when we talked about it earlier in the show, of course, the latest incidents of fabulism, where he's talking about how he got into the Naval Academy, but Roger Staubach was going there to play quarterback, so he decided to go to Delaware. I mean, it's just...
Oh, God. It's embarrassing.
Forget the whether or not he has the mental acuity and he's too old. He is a bad person, and bad people and pathological liars from the age of 29 when he joined the Senate to present shouldn't be in the White House. How about that? Keep it simple. All right, take some calls. Rich, Indian Head Park. Hey, Rich.
Yeah. Good morning, Dan. Good morning, Amy. I just have a quick question. Babies that are born in the United States to mothers that are here illegally, what's the difference between them and the Dreamers?
Well, the difference between them and the Dreamers is if they're born right now, that birthright citizenship is the difference. If they're born in this country, then they're a citizen. If a Dreamer is somebody who was brought over by their parents under the age of, say, 16, been in the U.S. for 5 years, got a high school diploma, and is otherwise, you know, in good standing legally. You know, in other words, they haven't committed any crime. So that's the Dreamer category.
Well, do you think that will ever change, the women coming over here having babies?
Well, this is
just so they're citizens.
Well, this is the argument that Trump made in a video this week that we talked about a bit earlier, which is that he wants to end birthright citizenship, as do others. Do I think it's a majority in Congress? No, I do not. But it'll be part of the conversation if you have a Republican control of the White House and Congress. Thanks for the call, Rich. Rick in Downers Grove.
Hey, good morning. Hey, it's just a Trump DeSantis thing, and I'm all for Trump because he's a known quantity. He does what he says he's going to do, and I like that. The problem I have with DeSantis, he's kind of a politician. I'm running for governor. He wins that. Then he says, you know what? I'm also going to go for president now. And if I was a Florida resident, I'd be like, whoa, we voted you to be governor. Not part-time governor and part-time presidential candidate. Run the state, and then when the next election comes up in 2028, then run. Don't run for governor. Run for president. You see, that's the problem I have with DeSantis.
Okay. Thanks for the call, Rick. But I'm looking at your Twitter profile, Amy.
What? Oh, now that you're following me?
I'm not following you. I was going to, and then I saw the masthead photo. Why is your masthead photo like your old handle where you were following 5,250 people, which is way too many people to follow? That's just like begging for followers. Okay. And you had 38,000 followers. Why is that like your masthead picture?
Because my account was hijacked and they stole swallowed my followers and my 15 years of tweets. I mean, I had some tweets that had 2 million views, some videos that I made that were, what? I'm just telling people to... Wait, is that self-serving? What
it's
do you just, think?
It's so just... weird. It's like so like, like the value of what I provide is based on how many people like or follow or
no,
whatever.
No, I was
cares?
Just explaining the situation. All right, are you trying to put a picture of you there?
Yes, I would. Are you trying to be picture? A social media influencer? Are you?
No, I don't. Know.
Are you trying to I'm be not. Like a female? What's his name? Paul Logan or Logan Paul or something?
Yeah, and then I'm going to start fighting.
Do you want to fight like Muhammad Ali's daughter?
My kids think we should be influencers. And I said, oh, really? What are we going to do? And they said we could be the fit family. We could show off our muscles working out.
The Jacobson.
Like, okay.
The big, the gargantuan Swedes. I don't mean that in like a fat way.
No.
Just like
the Norwegian, the Swedish. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because, you know, that my kids work out all the time.
The Sweetoricans.
The Sweetorican, yeah.
The ginormous Sweetorican family.
And I'll show you a picture that Andrew wants, or Peyton wants to start out
They
with.
Play volleyball. They're gourmet chefs.
Yeah.
They're take
smart.
In stray cats. They
this
do
what
yoga.
He wants to start with.
What else do you do?
That picture on the mountain. We climb mountains.
That's not a mountain. That's like a hill.
It's
It's a
how
a
dare
light,
you?
It's a light trail. Okay, let's just put it that way.
All right. I don't know. I think we're gonna have to work on the treatment for your reality show if the boys want to be reality TV stars.
Well, that's, you know, that's for that generation. They all think that's the easy way out. If I just invented something that somebody needs, that even if it's stupid, if I'm just an influencer, then I don't have to put in the work.
Exactly. People just follow me for, you know, doing asinine things or
right.
having a big ass like the Kardashians or something.
Exactly. But they know that. All the kids know that. They put down on their careers that they want to be an influencer.
You know how you could be an influencer?
How?
Date Ja Morant. Or Ja Morant, I guess is actually how you pronounce it. Ja Morant, the NBA player. He's a great player, actually. Murray State. He's gotten a little trouble with, you know, waving guns around.
Oh, that guy.
And stuff. Yeah. Under investigation by that alien who came down from his home planet to be the NBA commissioner.
David Sterling?
No, that's Adam Silver.
Adam Silver.
David Stern is gone. There was never a David Sterling who was NBA commissioner.
I was
Name Assassinator. Maybe Name Assassinator could be one of the features.
How many names can you mispronounce?
You need to do something like that. You need to have like a big like romantic drama, like date Ja Morant or Lizzo or somebody.
Okay, yeah. I'll have Peyton go break up Lizzo's wonderful relationship with her man.
You do that.
He'll storm the island.
Yeah, you could do like a year of being a dude, like that Dylan Mulvaney. You do a year of being a dude, and since you're on a conservative talk show and talk station, that would be like international news. Conservative is going to do a year as being a dude.
Yeah.
Going to try it out.
No,
gonna spin.
It's a man, baby.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm just trying to help you and the boys.
All right.
Maybe the whole family has to go opposite.
That would be funny, actually.
Yeah.
I would actually watch that.
Matt in Oaklawn, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Hey, good morning, guys. A shout out to the EIU men's baseball team who kicks off the College World Series tonight.
EIU.
You know, you guys have a lot
of Panthers.
A lot of Panthers.
My sister went to the Panther. My sister's a Panther. I love that.
Tony Romo.
Did you ever go to Mama's?
Tony Romo. We call you know what we are? We're the Patriots of Old Main, Dan. That's who we are.
You're the wait, say the what?
The Patriots of Old Main. That's our new moniker.
Tony Romo. You've got
Jimmy Garofalo, Jimmy G. He's a listener.
Sean Payton.
Sean Payton's a listener. Kevin Duckworth. Yeah, Kevin Duckworth, great blazer. He's a listener. They all listen. Thanks for the call, Matt.
When Tony Romo finally got Jimmy John's delivered to his house in Dallas, you know, because when they finally franchised out. He gave the guy $100 tip. Isn't that nice? Just for one sandwich. Because he was so happy to have something from home, from Eastern Illinois, Charleston, Mantoon, that he gave him $100.
Big deal. He should give him $100,000.
No.
He's the luckiest guy on the planet.
Tony Romo?
How many playoff games did he win again? Anybody? How many field goal holds did he fumble? Anybody?
Wow.
I mean, come on. Like he's, you know, he's like boy next door, cute and all that. I hate those. He's like a social media influencer rather than a football guy, as far as I'm concerned.
All right.
Jimmy G's a little bit that way too.
Jimmy G's hot. Come on,
sure.
Rolling Meadows finest, District 214. Yeah.
Nah, you know, I mean, obviously, I'm just jealous of their good looks.
Yeah, you are jealous.
I sense. Jealous of their good looks and talent. I'm even jealous of Kevin Duckworth's good looks and talents. Actually, I'm jealous of his size. If I was 6'10", I could have played in the NBA, too.
Mm.
Now look at me. It's sad. Sean and Darian, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Hey, good morning, guys. Yeah, Dan, I just want to thank you about Biden. You're right. It has nothing to do with his age or senility. He is corrupt. He is a despicable human being. I mean, I should be saying something happy on a Friday, but I can't stand the guy, and I'd like to use some other language that you won't allow me to do. So, yeah, so let's keep focused on what it is. He's just been a corrupt politician his whole life, and I can't wait till he gets out. Thank you.
Thanks, Sean. Bob in Buffalo Grove.
Good morning, Amy and Dan. Thanks for getting to me. Earlier this morning, you were
Bob, are you following Amy on Twitter?
Yes.
Okay.
Thank you.
She's not following me.
Oh, my God.
Oh my God. Blasphemy.
You don't reciprocate. You're not going to build much
of a what's
following.
Your handle, real quick?
Engineer Guy SE.
All right, Bob, go ahead.
Okay. Earlier this morning, you mentioned people with money, like Bill Gates, having a platform to express their expert opinions.
Yeah.
Let me offer what What about those people in the entertainment industry? And last year, I offered this idea for you on Friday to select a moron of the week. So let me nominate Jane Fonda. She is given the platform to express her insanity. I heard from her this week that white males, you, Dan, are the cause of climate change.
Yep, absolutely. Thanks for the call, so Bob. You guys, moron of the week, Jane Fonda, 50 years running. Kevin, Austin, Texas.
Good morning, Dan. I have to say, Amy's headshot is beautiful. I mean, it's kind of...
Well, everybody's gazing at you on Twitter now. Isn't that nice?
Absolutely. I think it's a little bit better than you looking for your balls in the rough. That's on your headshot. I do want to say that for all those people that feel like they've been bumped by Speaker McCarthy, and I'm not talking about being bumped from a phone call, I hope they get involved. And I hope there's one thing that you do is talk about that's just for the local, the politics. I hope that McCarthy's trying to build up a get out the vote operation to get so he stays in office, because it's pretty precarious. One last thing is I hope that you focus on auditing the TIF districts that are in Chicago. Those are just big slush funds that were set up to help economic development. Now they're not being used for that.
Yeah,
so,
thanks for the call, Kevin. We had that conversation with Roger Romanelli from the Fulton Market Association the other day. That's a legitimate area of inquiry and discussion. Steve, Orland Park.
Dan, I heard that AM radio may be a thing of the past, that it may be coming to an end, and I wanted to get your opinion or find out the who, what, when, where, why, and how this came up, and I'll disconnect the call and listen for your reply.
Thanks for the call, Steve.
Been saved.
We had this, well, it was never imperiled. We had this discussion a couple weeks ago, actually, when you were off, Amy, and this was when, you know, Ford was going to not have the AM dial in their new cars, and they since relented. But even if Ford went in that direction, AM radio is not going away, just like news outlets aren't going away. You know, the daily newspapers, they're going to be in different forms, different communication channels, maybe different revenue models, but it's not going away. And one of the reasons that AM radio won't go away is because it's unique. What we're doing right now is unique in media, which is the two-way real-time communication, unscripted, which at least the good shows are. That is not going to go away. So people always look at the medium rather, not always, but some people focus on the medium and technology rather than the content. And quality content is what builds community, is what builds audience. That's sustainable. You can have all the technology, and if you have nothing important to say, no value to add to your listeners or consumers, that's when you go away. So the death of AM radio is greatly exaggerated, or talk radio. Chuck and Delavan to close it out.
Hey, Dan, thanks for mentioning earlier my garage band, Lobotomized Media. Hey, there's a factory down in Delavan with a big lake. I dressed in black last night like a ninja, stuck in, and I caught me about 30 bluegills. So I got all-you-can-eat fish fry at my farmhouse tonight. So anybody wants to stop by, you got to bring your own beer. No Bud Light allowed. And then we're going to head over to the Abbey and do some dancing with Triple D tonight. They're there on Friday. So you guys all have a great weekend and enjoy yourself. And happy week after Memorial Day.
Thanks for the call, Chuck. Remember the Buggles? That was Lobotomized Media. Chuck's band was a Buggles cover band. Remember that? That first video ever on MTV? Video killed the radio star.
The star. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then a decade later, we had Rush Limbaugh. I guess not.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
Thanks for listening to Chicago's Morning Answer podcast, sponsored by Signature Bank. Signature Bank takes pride in helping customers grow their business and provide unmatched banking expertise, custom financial solutions, and the industry's best technology. So whether you're a business looking for a deposit relationship or needs a ready source of financing, Signature Bank is the right bank for you. Call today at 773-467-5600 to hear how Signature Bank can help your business grow and thrive. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.